So, Jess.
So, Brian.
We have a first of a kind.
A first of a kind?
Yes.
What?
The first appointed medical officer spearheading. Come on, didn't you prep?
I did. Let me say it, though. So we have the first ever chief medical officer for the Parkinson's Foundation, Dr. Mantry. Hi.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good, how are you?
Doing fine. And thanks for having me on.
Did we get that right? You're the first ever chief medical officer for Parkinson's Foundation?
That's right, yes. The foundation has had a national medical advisor for a number of years, Dr. Michael Oken, who's you know, remaining involved in things, for sure. Michael's wonderful, but I'm really excited to sort of step into this role as chief medical officer and helping to drive more at the foundation.
Good. Well, I'm super excited because when I was reading about what the foundation had on their website about you, I love the fact that you are very, I mean, obviously most doctors, you want them to be patient focused, right? But just how you personalize the care, and you've done so much, I think, with medical students or like, you know, future professionals, and educating them on the whole narrative of how they should be leading patients when it comes to from a movement disorder specialist standpoint. So I was super excited to see that. Welcome to The Secret Life of Parkinson's, a podcast created by people living with Parkinson's to help break the stigma of a disease no one likes to talk about. Now, here are your hosts, Jessica Krauser and Brian Baker. So thank you so much for joining us. And I know your background, obviously, there's a slew of information, but I would say, what are the top hitters that people should know most about you? I know you're an MDS, but by way of background, what are a few other things that you'd like to share?
Yeah, so I am a movement disorders neurologist, and I'm continuing to see patients once a week in the movement disorders clinic here at Duke University. I'm also a clinician educator. And as you alluded to, I spend a lot of my time before joining the foundation in teaching our, you know, young medical students, nursing students, and others about how to take care of people with complex conditions like Parkinson's disease well. You know, often in the movement disorders world, we say things like, if you've seen one person with Parkinson's, you've seen one person with Parkinson's. You guys might have heard that before. But it's, you know, it's so true because everybody has their own story and their own, you know, full life. And Parkinson's is one piece of that. Mm-hmm. It's important for, you know, our students and residents to keep that in mind as they're learning to take care of people with complex conditions like Parkinson's, that you know, the Parkinson's may be the focus of that clinic visit, but the patient, the person with Parkinson's, has a whole life story before and after Parkinson's. And so trying to bring some of that into clinical care.
So that's what I'd like to touch on is really just that clinical experience that, you know, when we come in to see an MDS, you know, how people can prepare before, during, and after. But I don't know how this is going to come off sounding, so I'm trying to figure out the best way to say it. Because not everybody has the best experience with their movement disorder specialist. I know every doctor is focused on the patient, but like I feel like you're taking it to the level that we want to see. So how did you get there?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, I've always, I think, had this orientation towards people's stories. It's the thing that drew me into medicine in the first place. You know, when I was an undergrad, I was actually a literature major. I majored in comparative lit. And I was always looking, when I got into med school, I was always looking for a way to bring storytelling into medicine. And I had this really amazing opportunity as a med student to do a master's degree in narrative medicine, which is all about the patient's story and the sort of patient and family and their whole life and the way that, you know, clinicians of all stripes, not just doctors, but nurses and physical therapists and social workers need to kind of pay attention to more than just the physical signs of an illness and really kind of think deeply about the impact that illness might be having on a person's quality of life in all kinds of ways. And so then when I came back into, you know, clinical training as a neurology resident and then as a movement disorders fellow, I think I've always kind of had that orientation towards like really trying to listen to the patient's story and the family story when I'm in clinic, because that's what helps me guide, what my recommendations might be around people's symptoms and quality of life management.
It's probably a lot of people you can train. Okay, so if when we're talking about an appointment, there are so many people I know, one of them being you, that go into the appointments just saying,
Well, I think there's two. I mean, there's the initial appointment, right?
Yeah,
So
okay, so there's.
the questions you're going to have, the initial appointment, are probably not the same questions or
Yeah, but the initial
should.
appointment, you might not even know that you have it yet.
Correct.
So you're going in. So maybe we can decipher between the two of like, if you're not diagnosed, but you might have an inkling of obviously something's wrong. What should a person go in with? And then if you, and then when you have been diagnosed, how should a person prepare? Because so many people go in and they're like, I'm fine. Like no big deal. So like if you're that, because there are people who do watch this who have not been yet diagnosed. What is something that they should be prepared with to talk about or bring up during that first appointment?
Yeah, oh, great question. So I would say, often the first appointment is really about trying to get a clear sense of the history of symptoms and when different symptoms cropped up. Because, one of the things that can be really challenging about getting a diagnosis of Parkinson's, is that a lot of the very early symptoms might be like very, very subtle, and things that people don't realize are Parkinson's symptoms until later. And they realize in retrospect, like, oh, I was, just as an example, I was slowing down when I was going for a walk with my family, and I noticed that I wasn't able to keep up as well. Or I would sometimes have a little bit of a tremor when I was, drinking water or when I was writing, but I didn't really think much of it. Things like that. So I think for the first appointment, it is helpful, particularly if you're concerned about Parkinson's or, you have, say, a family history or some other reason to suspect that you're at higher risk than the average person. It's really helpful to take some time ahead of the appointment and like even write down what your timeline of symptoms was, so that when you go to that appointment, and you have however many minutes you have with the neurologist or the movement specialist, you can be really sort of clear about first this happened, then this happened, then this happened, as much as you can. I know that's not always possible to be like, specific dates, but at least the order in which different symptoms started to become noticeable, because that's very helpful to us as we're trying to think through like, is this Parkinson's disease? Is it a potential mimic of Parkinson's disease? What else could be going on here? So I'd say that's probably the most helpful thing before the first appointment. And then, for follow-up appointments, a lot of the focus tends to be on, perhaps we made a medication change or we, started some new therapies. And so tracking how that's impacting, again, specific symptoms. Is it impacting your tremor? Is it impacting your walking? Like, what is the symptom that we're trying to get under control? And how did this change help or not help? So again, taking that time ahead of the appointment to sort of write things down can help you be really prepared.
And I think it's really important for people to know who are maybe like new to Parkinson's. It's like literally list out everything and anything that you think is wrong with you. I mean, and I know that sounds crazy, but like looking back at it now, I had apathy before I knew what it was. And then I know a lot of people have constipation issues or, things that you're like didn't I've never would have thought was connected, or like my shoulder has been hurting or my hip or whatever. And it's like all of those things just bring up everything because it could be part of the symptoms. It might not be, but it potentially is.
Yeah, I would say it's a good idea to be comprehensive like that. And the other symptom complex that I'll add to that list that you just gave, is sleep issues, because that's a really common
Yeah,
thing that people
right.
can have, even, years before anything else crops up. your sleep gets really disrupted, or you might be acting out your dreams and moving around in your sleep. Usually, if you have a bed partner, they would be the one to know that because you're asleep. But if those are really common sort of early warning signs
We're actually
that
going to
people
have
don't usually realize, because why would you?
Because it's like, it's one of those things again, like sleep apnea or, you know, RBD. It's like just making those connections so people understand what's going on.
Jess does a very good job of journaling all her symptoms. It's like, I do not. I'm the one that goes in there and goes, oh, I'm fine. I don't have any issues. You know, medication's great. DBS is great. Everything is just
Fine and
fine and
dandy.
dandy. Until Jess and my girlfriend start speaking for me.
So, what would you say to care partners? Like, well, one, would you say to the patient, like, make sure somebody does come to all of your appointments, most of your appointments, and or what type of say do they have while they're in there?
Yeah, great question. I think it's always helpful if you can to have a second set of ears and eyes in an appointment, right? There might be a lot of information that's discussed and things, and so it's helpful to have somebody who can help you, you know, maybe like take notes and then talk about it afterwards and so on. So care partners or close friends can be really great in that role. I think the other way that care partners are so helpful in the clinical appointment is like they have a different perspective on what's going on. You know, Brian, to your point, like you might feel that everything is fine and say everything's fine. And I certainly have patients like that too, right? Like who either are sort of, I'll say, stoic people at baseline, where everything kind of is fine for them. Or maybe they don't realize or they don't recognize that something is a symptom, but the point of view from the care partner can be really helpful at like helping, again, the movement disorders doctor get a better sense of like what's going on at home, like outside of the 20 minutes or 30 minutes or 15 minutes that you get with the doctor, right? Like there's hours and hours of time that you're spending at home or at work or, you know, in the rest of your life. And so the care partner's perspective can be really helpful for us at like rounding that out so that the doctor has the best, you know, holistic sense of what's going on.
Do you recommend people to take videos of themselves and to show it?
Yes, that is so helpful, especially if there's a symptom that sort of comes and goes and you're worried that when you go to the doctor, it's kind of like sometimes taking your car to the mechanic and like now it's not making whatever noise it was making, right? It's the same idea. Like, so if you can get a video or have a care partner take a video of a intermittent symptom, that's so helpful for us to be able to review that because I would say, you know, a good portion of movement disorders diagnosis, both of Parkinson's, but also of specific kind of subcategories or sub-issues within Parkinson's, like probably 50% or more of that is seeing what's going on. Like it's a very visual specialty. And so if we can have a video, and know what triggers, there might be for a particular intermittent symptom, that can be really helpful.
Did you ever take a video?
No.
No, I did one time just because. So here, this is my other question, because every time when I would go in, it was, you know, typically maybe like 10 or 11 in the morning. So I was pretty good in terms of like where I was in my medication. And it was later on in the evening is when I would get really dyskinetic. And so I like took a video of it just to show my MDS. But is there a recommendation as to should you make your appointment like shortly after you take medicine, or do you make your appointment so that they see you off?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it depends on what the purpose of the visit is. I would
Okay.
say that for most sort of routine appointments, like say you've started medicine and the follow-up visit is sort of to see how the medicine is working, you probably want to come in at a time of day when, you know, your medicines are working at their
Working,
best, because that way, if there are leftover symptoms, the movement specialist will be able to adjust the medicine to compensate, hopefully. But there are certain times, especially if somebody is considering, DBS or some of these other more advanced therapy workups, where we specifically ask people to come in off their medicine and then they take the medicine during the appointment and we can see the change, before and after medicine. And we usually videotape that and stuff so that we can refer back to it afterwards.
So I've heard some people say before, and I think it might, I don't know if it's generational, or not, just again, like advocating for yourself, but I feel like some people go in and they want you to tell us like what's wrong or what's new. Like, almost like if it was a true, like, how you go in and you might get like an X-ray or you get your blood taken and then the doctor tells you, okay, this is what's going on. It's up to us to tell you what's going on and then you to then help us from there. So what are some, like, I don't know, some either questions that, patients can bring into you or something that a patient should always bring up? I don't know, just like some key starters for them, because I don't think people realize that this is all on us.
Yeah, it largely is on, the person with Parkinson's and or, care partners, if they have a perspective to add. But I would say that, partly that's because, unfortunately, we don't have an X-ray or a blood.
Whether I'm worried about hosting or just giving that perfect gift, creating a delicious holiday for my loved ones is super important to me. From effortless holiday hostings to unforgettable gifts, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. They've always been super convenient in giving me the most high-quality steaks I could ask for, whether for myself or a loved one. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com, and for an extra $35 off, use code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Go to omahasteaks.com and use code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Test to like track Parkinson's symptoms. Mm-hmm. It's all based on your history, right? So I would say probably the key things are, what's your most bothersome symptom? Or what's the most bothersome thing you're dealing with? And sometimes that may end up being something that's not directly related to Parkinson's. And then the MDS can help guide you to maybe you should talk with somebody else about this issue and give you a referral. But if it is related to Parkinson's, it's like, what's the most bothersome thing? Is the medicine, if you're on medicine, is that controlling your symptoms adequately? What side effects are you having? Things like that. And then also one question that I sometimes ask my patients that can help them open up about some of these topics is, is there something that you wish your treatments were doing that they're not doing?
That's a good one.
Because that can sometimes get people thinking in a different way about, like, oh, I wish that I could do X better.
Yeah.
And maybe that requires a medicine adjustment. Maybe it requires, occupational therapy or physical therapy or something. But that can be a very helpful question sometimes.
That's a really good question.
It is a good one.
Like, I kind of want to share that with other people. Again, the amount of people that we've talked to, different patients, sometimes individuals will seek a second opinion from a different neurologist or another MDS because, one, they don't want to believe that they have Parkinson's, or two, because of the relationship, or, they just, they don't feel like that comfort. When do you feel like it would be time for somebody, like, what would you recommend, like, when it's time to seek a second opinion from an MDS?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I mean, I think the relationship angle or the relationship aspect, like, that can't be minimized, right? Like, you have to trust your doctor or the clinician who's taking care of you. You have to trust that they have your best interest at heart, that they are, like, medically competent and they know what all the new therapies are, things like that. So if at any point you feel you're not getting that out of your person, like, that is absolutely a good reason to seek a second opinion. The other reason sometimes people seek second opinions, especially if they're looking at a second opinion at an academic medical center or like a larger health system, is that there are some places that don't offer certain types of therapy. So like, for instance, many community clinicians may not offer DBS testing and DBS placement in their offices. They might have to refer to, you know, the local university or, you know, a larger movement disorder center that does offer that kind of care. So sometimes like the level of care you need sort of encourages you to get a second opinion, right? To be able to take advantage of some of these more advanced or newer therapies, DBS, the new Parkinson's medication, pumps, things like that. May not be available at, you know, your local doctor's office, but they could absolutely be available at other places. And sometimes if it's more of that, you know, if the relationship is good, but you just need the higher level therapy, often I will co-manage patients with their local doctor. So like they might see me once a year, but they see their local person more often because it's closer and it's easier. And then especially with electronic medical records, it's often, you know, not always easy, not always straightforward, but certainly easier than it used to be for us to be able to communicate with each other and say, hey, I'm thinking about, you know, recommending they increase their medicine or that they increase this or that. And it helps keep everybody, you know, on the same page about what's going on.
How often do you see your MDS?
Probably every 6 months on average.
I was thinking.
I'm thinking about after this next visit, maybe pushing it out to like a yearly visit.
Yeah. I feel like it was a lot in the beginning. Right. What would you recommend or what would you tell like a newly diagnosed person that they should expect? Because I do know some people are like, I was handed medication and they said, I'll see you in 6 months. And I'm like, really? I'm like, I saw my MDS, I think like 3 months later,
right?
Like when I was first diagnosed. So what's like the protocol?
Yeah. I mean, I would say the protocol kind of depends on, you know, what types of changes or things are going on. Certainly I would say if someone's getting a new medicine or like a significant adjustment in medicine, ideally you would want to follow up in 2 or 3 months, partly as a check-in to see how it's going, to make any adjustments that are needed. If things are sort of more routinized and stable and you're sort of coming in for, hey, things are going, you know, to your point, things are fine, everything's okay, meds are working, I just need refills, you know, that might push out to 6 months or a year. I think, unfortunately, though, you know, the challenge sometimes with getting people in that 2 to 3 month time span for big changes can be really challenging just because people's appointments get booked out way further. I'll speak for myself, way further than I would like in terms of, you know, I would like to see my patients every 2 months, but there are so many more patients and so few movement disorders doctors. That it gets hard.
Yeah, that is so true. There's too many of us and too little of you guys.
As I said, it's almost better to schedule every six and then if you really need something. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, sometimes with telehealth, that can make it a little bit easier. Not often, if there isn't an open slot at all, that it's kind of a moot point. But sometimes we'll do, you know, we'll alternate an in-person with a telehealth appointment or something, mainly to save the person with Parkinson's all of the hassle of, you know, driving in and parking and all of that fun stuff that nobody likes to do at the doctor's office.
Here's a random question. How much are you able to tell patients that have a community, like a Parkinson's community, versus those that don't? And what I mean is I have a couple different groups of, you know, Parkinson's friends, and I feel like we ask each other so many questions and we give each other answers from our own experiences or from what another doctor said. So I feel like I don't message my doctor a whole lot. And I'm sure there's, because I feel like we're kind of annoying people. Like we have questions all the time. So are there people that constantly ask questions versus those that don't, but still feel like they have a good handle on stuff? Meaning like community is really important for us.
Community is super important. Yes. Both in terms of, you know, getting advice and getting tips from people who are living with Parkinson's, because like that's as good as anything, right? Like I can suggest changes in medicines or I can refer people for DBS or whatever. But I'm not living in that body and experiencing those symptoms on a day-to-day basis. So having a Parkinson's community and support is like huge, I think, for answering those direct questions and just for helping with, you know, sometimes people with Parkinson's can feel really isolated or stigmatized. And so having that Parkinson's community can help with that angle as well. I would say that, most of my patients don't message ton. There are a few, of course. And sometimes, I don't know actually how much of it is, they're asking questions of other people with Parkinson's. I'm sure that is happening. I think sometimes too, though, what can happen as part of having Parkinson's is it can affect your anxiety levels in a lot of different ways. And so sometimes I've noticed that when I have had some patients who have been sort of really persistently messaging or worried about XYZ, it's really more a manifestation of anxiety than anything else. And sometimes getting a handle on that can be really helpful at helping people's quality of life and helping them feel like they have that outlet. I certainly I wouldn't want anyone to feel like they are bothering their doctor when they message or when they call, because that's what we're here for, right? Like we did all of this work and training and learned all this stuff to be able to help give people advice. But yeah, I think it's sometimes a question of knowing or getting the advice from different places and then triangulating as to what works best for you.
What is like one thing, like one key takeaway that people can walk away with of like an immediate action that they can, what's something that a patient can do that would improve their overall patient care with their doctor? Like, is there something that we can, like you said in the beginning, like, but what's one thing? Is it writing it down? Is it taking the video? Is it just having that preparation beforehand?
I would say that taking the time to do the prep beforehand, either in your own journal or the Parkinson's Foundation has worksheets on our
Yeah, they
website,
do.
that people can, download and fill out, and that helps, put some structure around it sometimes as well.
You can
But
still
that's probably
order.
the number one thing.
Sorry, you can still like order. It's like a, is it a hospital book or a something from
Yes,
her?
yeah, there's
Okay.
a hospital
Hospital,
safety
okay.
guide, and that's in PDF form on the website, and you can order a physical copy if you'd like. And then there's also now a PDF worksheet that's in the like Optimizing Care Initiative that's really all about like preparing for your appointment and thinking about like again, what are like your top three symptoms that you want to make sure get addressed? How are your medicines treating you? Things like that is all in that worksheet.
What?
Nothing.
Oh,
She's answered a lot of her.
I know. I had a lot of questions thrown at you, but one last thing. For the Parkinson's Foundation, what are you? What's the hope that they have, or the goals that you have for like from a patient standpoint, like what you're going to bring to the table, or?
So I think a couple of different things. One is because of my background as an educator, I'm really excited about some educational events and initiatives that we're getting started, both things that are more patient-facing, like we've got these upcoming quarterly, approximately quarterly, like a webinar that's essentially an Ask Me Anything. So it's going to be me, sometimes, a colleague or two, and it's going to be an open forum
Good
for
luck.
patients to be able to ask questions, because we know that there are so many
There
questions
are.
that people have that you don't have time to ask of your doctor, or that you think of after the appointment, right? That's a really classic one when you're in the car driving home. So this is intended to be an outlet for some of that. I mean, we're not going to be able to give people direct one-on-one advice, but talking about certain symptoms or symptom management that's how that one person has a question about is probably going to help other people,
That's
right, who have
cool.
that same issue. So there's that. I've got some educational events coming up that are more aimed at professionals,
Okay, good. I was going to ask that.
primary care doctors, yeah, primary care
Good.
doctors, general neurologists, residents, trying to build that capacity. Because, like I said, there's so much, unfortunately, so much demand for movement disorders care, and there are so few movement disorders neurologists. So I'm hoping to inspire some of these, medical students and residents to go into this field, so that they can continue to care for people with Parkinson's.
Yeah, because I would say, I mean, how many times have we heard somebody say, "Oh, I went and saw my primary care. They threw some carbolevo-dopa at me and told me, check back in
Yeah.
A year.
So it's like, it's not just the neurologists that need educated. And the reason why like even neurologists need educated is because some people walk out of there and they don't even know that exercise is supposed to be helpful. You know, like right. just like the basic things. So I love that you're going to be educating them because that's always been something in my mind. Not that I can't, I'm a patient, but like, I always thought, I'm like, I want to bring them in here and I want to tell them from a patient standpoint, this is what's going on, you know, and how to treat, yeah. how to handle, you know, this patient population. But I love that. So thank you for doing
yeah,
that.
Yeah. So we're trying to build this capacity in so many different yeah. ways, right? Because it's, you know, we're recognizing that there's just so much need, unfortunately. And you know, that brings me to the other big sort of initiative that we're just starting to get underway, but I'm really excited about, which is, you know, a new focus on prevention in Parkinson's mm-hmm. and trying to identify what are some of the environmental triggers yeah. and things and toxins that we need to act on now to kind of stem this rising yeah. tide of Parkinson's and try to, you know, make sure that in 2050, we're not continuing to see these growing numbers of people with Parkinson's.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's great. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time.
Of course. Thank you for having me on.
And I know a lot of people benefit from hearing how to prepare. And I think what I'm just going to leave everybody with this now. So in our last 30 seconds, I'll leave you with this. When you're preparing for your first appointment, be prepared ahead of time with any symptom that you can think of, no matter if you think it's connected to one thing or another, even if you're not sure you're going in for a Parkinson's diagnosis or not. Or if you're going in for your second appointment, start bringing up other things that you may not have thought were connected because there is a possibility that it is. But, you know, stick to see if you can get a movement disorder specialist or a neurologist and reach out when you can. And then check out Parkinson's Foundation to see if you can ask a question on a quarterly basis with Dr. Mantry. So with that, we will see you next time. And thank you again so much. The Secret Life of Parkinson's is produced by Melissa Carlson and Steve Brandenburg. To contact us, email info@thesecretlifeofpd.org. The Secret Life of Parkinson's is not responsible or liable for any medical advice, diagnosis, course of treatment, or any other information obtained through this podcast. The information provided by The Secret Life of Parkinson's is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you heard on this podcast. You are encouraged to consult a physician for a definitive diagnosis.